Good afternoon and welcome to Sound Bites for October 29th, 1989. I'm Bob Smith. Coming up this hour, new dangers to networks. We're going to be talking with consultant John Petrofsky and New York Post science editor Joe Nicholson about pranksters who messed up the EMS network in New York City and how something similar could happen to networks nationwide. Then in the second portion of our program, right after 1:30, Desktop Publishing takes the spotlight as members of the Picture City Personal Computer Programming Club answer your questions at 263-WXXI. We'll get the latest on the inside of desktop publishing and how to make the most of it. Nick Francesco offers a unique and humorous perspective on the new technology as well. But first, the latest news from the computer world. If you're a power user, you've probably been waiting for the new and more powerful computers based on Intel's 486 microprocessor chip. Well, Soundbites has just learned that your wait is going to be at least a bit longer. Intel says field testing of prototypes has revealed a flaw in the chip, and we learn what's wrong from InfoWorld executive editor Michael Miller.
What we know right now is that there's a problem in the floating point unit within the chip. The floating point unit is what does math. And apparently that there's a problem that shows up occasionally in very rare situations in which it simply gives the wrong result. This obviously is going to be a problem to people who are depending on the chip, but it's really not a problem right now. What people forget is that the 386 had a similar problem in its early releases before it started shipping in volume.
Miller told Soundbites that Compaq was expected to roll out a 486-based machine at a news conference a week from tomorrow. IBM has already shipped small numbers of upgrade boards with the new chip, but has suspended those shipments until the bugs are worked out of the microprocessor. Production of debugged 486 chips is to resume within the next 8 weeks, possibly within a week to 10 days. But volume shipments of 486 machines are expected to be put back several weeks while stocks of defect-free chips are being built up. It seems computers at New York City's 9/11 Dispatch Center are dealing with more than just emergency calls. Workers at the center and the Emergency Medical System Dispatch have programmed an X-rated game into the system, and a management consultant who called attention to it says he has been fired as a result of blowing the whistle. John Petrofsky told Soundbites that the game is called Foreplay, and he thinks emergency dispatch workers could be distracted enough by it to affect response times in case of emergency. He is also afraid it could act like a virus in the 9/11 system, causing a slowdown or breakdown. Petrofsky says this should not be looked on as an isolated prank, but as typical of what can happen when networks of computers are abused or tampered with either from within or without. And he predicts the growing popularity of networking will leave networks and individual machines subject to interference by such pranksters. We'll be reaching out to him moments from now on Live Line to learn more. We'll also be joined by New York Post science editor Joe Nicholson, who broke the story to an amazed public in New York City. A Pittsburgh company has developed a new wrinkle on compact databases, a pocket-sized electronic encyclopedia. Microlytics Incorporated has joined with Random House Publishers to market a mini-encyclopedia smaller than a paperback book with 10 megabytes of memory and over 20,000 entries. It can accommodate extra memory cartridges to include updates, a dictionary, a thesaurus, a Bible, or foreign language translators. It's expected to sell initially for about $400. Company President Michael Weiner told us one of the purposes is to make learning as much fun is playing a Nintendo game. That end, he told us, it's been made very user-friendly.
Here it's all very nicely condensed in an electronic table of contents. That's one point of entry. Another point of entry is to do a search, and you can search not only on the headings and the things that you can find in a table of contents and an index, but to a much greater degree than possible with a book, you can search the entire textual content, search for any word. So if you are a student and you were told to do a report on a famous French general, and if you lost your notes and can't remember who the general is, and you'd know the name if you heard it, but you just can't think of it. If you type in French general, you'll get a list of all the French generals.
Weiner says before long you'll be able to download it to a standard desktop PC as well. Hewlett-Packard says it has a new software package for network PCs which will allow machines to send tasks to each other automatically to speed up network operations. It's called Task Broker, and HP says it can pick and choose among machines in a network to find the one with the most available space and power for each task. It'll ship in January, and initially it's just for machines which run on the Unix operating system. Power failures need not give you heart failure anymore. National Semiconductor and Ramtron Corporation will soon begin shipping ferroelectric memory chips for random access memory. They behave like normal random access memory chips, except the materials used can form microscopic switches that retain data without constant flow of electricity. Initial chips will only have about 4K of memory. And that's this week's Computer News. I'm Bob Smith, and you're listening to Soundbites on WXXI 1370. The segment that we have planned for you for this time around is about the increasingly popular practice of networking and how it can possibly be dangerous to users and even to the public. New York City computer consultant John Petrofsky is going to be on live line with us momentarily from New York City. He is the man who discovered a major bug in the network of the emergency medical system that dispatches ambulances throughout the New York City area. John, I hope we have you available on the live line right now. Let's see if we can bring him up on live line. John, can you hear us? John, can you hear us? That looks like we're having a little bit of trouble. We've just made some changes in our telephone system, and hopefully we'll be able to bring him up momentarily. John, can you hear us right now? Evidently, we're having some technical problems with our telephone system, and hopefully we'll be able to get those rectified very shortly. We're going to be coming back to that particular segment of the program later on in the broadcast. But first, let us move along to what we had promised you earlier in the broadcast, which, of course, is another in our series of segments covering popular applications for PC users. And today, we've planned for you a discussion of desktop publishing, which is one of the most popular applications that we have available today. We have with us from the Picture City Personal Computer Programming Club, Dave Woodruff, Brian Wilson, and Jody Davies. And it's good to have you all with us today. Thanks for being with us here on Soundbites.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Bob. And let me ask you, first of all, as we start out, it might be helpful to discuss what is desktop publishing as opposed to just word processing or anything else. It might help to define it just to begin with. Who wants to take that?
I think probably the big difference is that desktop publishing assumes that you're going beyond what you can usually do with your word processor. Instead of just being something to write text into, you also want to add graphics to it. And to a certain extent, you're also concerned not just with typing it in and putting the graphics in, but what kind of output you have. Desktop publishing implies a high-quality output result. And that's for people who are looking for, gee, I want to show something to my customers that looks better than something we whipped off on a typewriter and sent them to the mail. Because what you see at your door gets red depending on how exciting it looks to your eye. And that's what desktop publishing is invented for. We want to be able to produce documents, if you're using desktop publishing, that look exciting enough to, as Thomas Jefferson would like to say, to command your assent to read them.
Now, there was one thing that I wonder at the outset. A couple of things. First of all, I want to differentiate between this and just standard word processing, but by the same token, one sort of implies the other, doesn't it, in the terms that, as we discussed, I think, in a previous program, you really do need a good word processing program to interface with your desktop publishing. You can't do one effectively without the other, can you?
That's true. You do. You really need a good word processor to support your desktop publisher because of what David was saying just a moment ago. Desktop publishing is not exactly an environment that you would want to type your document into, whereas if you have a good word processor, you can get that all done up front and just import the finished product into your desktop publisher to spruce it up.
Now, of course, one thing I want to say before we go any further, we will be going to our second segment, incidentally, right after 1:30, so we want to beg your indulgence if you'd been expecting, first of all, to hear about the networking segment. We will be doing that starting at 1:30 today. We did have some problems with our telephone system, but they are corrected. And incidentally, if you do have some questions concerning desktop publishing, this growing application, we'd like you to address them to us at 263-WXXI. That's 263-9994, and that is how you make the connection on Soundbites. Now, one thing that I think we want to know, first of all, is who is likely to use it. Now, Jody, you put out a newsletter for PC Cubed, for the Computing Club, which is desktop published in the traditional sense of that word. And who else might possibly make use of something like this and might be a candidate for a program of this type to load into your PC?
Just about anyone who would possibly have output going beyond their office. If you're just having documents that are within the office, you may not need to go as far as a desktop publisher. But if these are going to be traveling beyond your office, you definitely would want to put them into a desktop publisher and make them much more presentable and, as David said, much more readable.
Now, of course, each of you has experience in this type of thing. I'm wondering what each of you in turn uses it for. Jody, we mentioned you put out a club newsletter to probably a large membership ranks to get the word out as to what's going on. And, Brian, your thoughts, how you use that kind of program, what you use it for?
Sure. In the past, I've used desktop publishing to put out newsletters, things like that. Currently now, the only thing I'm actively doing with it, I must admit, is putting out a cookbook. Kind of a little tongue-in-cheek thing, a Christmas gift if people want to give it to their friends.
I guess what it comes down to is it makes you your own author and your own publisher, essentially, in a very real and very important way, and allows you to maybe bypass the middleman, one or two middlemen, let's say. Dave, your thoughts, your experiences with it.
Well, I've been accused of desktop publishing everything. I only use my word processor now as a front end for my desktop publisher. I drive people nuts all the time in our organization by sending out items that never just have text on it, that always have pictures on them. The last time I published an officer's list, it had pictures all over it. So I use mine everywhere because I can enhance it. I can do different things with it. I have a lot more control over the text and the layout than I do from a standard word processor.
So it allows you to make even a standard document or something that's relatively mundane, you might say, visually interesting or exciting. I'm interested about, Brian, I want to get back to you for a moment, because I'm interested in the application from the point of view of being able to put out your own book. Now, everybody has probably got at least one book inside him, they say. Everybody is his own author. Everybody has this feeling to express him or herself. Sure. This is something that makes it possible of a lot lower cost than you might have thought of in the past, isn't it, if we want to express ourselves in that way?
Oh, yeah, sure. And people that have a lot of creativity tend to jump right into desktop publishing because it gives you an opportunity. Even if it never does get published, you have that copy in your hand, and you can give it to your friends in a way that you couldn't do if you were relying on someone else to put that together for you.
I was just thinking, working on a doctoral dissertation about a dozen years ago, about how easy it would have been if such programs and such machinery existed back then. I mean, there were no such things as this back in 1976 and 77, really, were there?
No, not really. In fact, kind of funny story, when I was taking an advanced composition course in college, before a lot of people had used word processors, I had one, and I had a professor whose policy was you can rewrite this as many times as you want to improve your grade. And so he would hand a paper back, and if I didn't get the grade that I thought I wanted to get, I would go back and make some changes to it. And within an hour or so, I'd have it back at his office. And he couldn't understand this, but of course he didn't want to ask how I was doing this. And needless to say, by the end of the semester, I had a word processing convert.
And he's probably publishing whatever books he's publishing today with the aid of a machine, undoubtedly. That's something that I imagine must be a boon to a college student, just from that point of view, that he can put together reports, graphs, just about anything that you want to. And I can imagine if there had been such a thing in my day, it would have made life a lot easier and probably made the degree come a year sooner.
Oh, sure.
It really is a time saver, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And one of the things that I found in having come from a teaching background is that students really enjoy writing a lot more when they have to worry less about the process of writing and more about the end result, getting the end result out.
Now, of course, I want to get to something right now in the nuts and bolts, and this is where I suspect our listeners have questions, too. So we can take your calls now at 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Because it does appear that, in fact, our telephone system is indeed working again, and we want to try to get your questions answered as well. We're getting to the phones in just a minute, but I want to talk a little bit about nuts and bolts. And that is, first of all, about the range of programs that's available for any kind of PC, whether you're working Macintosh World or maybe Apple II, or maybe you're working PC or PC clone or whatever. there is a very wide range of possible programs with, I understand, very wide range of capabilities around, isn't there? I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit about that range.
Certainly. In the PC world, there's a very large choice. Some of the programs that that I've used, Ventura, Desktop Publisher, PageMaker, other programs that are out, there's a package called Byline. Many, many packages to choose from, and it often becomes a real difficult process trying to narrow down which one you're going to use for a particular task.
I understand each of you has a personal favorite. Would you care to share with me in turn, let's go counterclockwise, starting with Jody, which one your personal favorite is and what the features that it has are and how it differentiates from some of the others out there?
Well, personally, I use PageMaker just because for someone who's coming with a strong word processing background, which I have, it's the closest thing to the high-end word processors that I've used, and so it's a very, very easy to carry over.
Just something you're used to, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Brian, your thoughts?
For me, it'd be really hard to narrow down and say that I like one package better than another. The two packages that I use most are Ventura and PageMaker. I think if I had a job where I had extensive typographical work to do, a lot of working with strictly type and maybe not as much graphics, I'd probably swing a little bit more towards Ventura because it takes the approach more of a typographical package. On the other hand, I think when I'm producing small newsletters, things like that, that are a little bit more graphically based, perhaps, I tend to steer more towards PageMaker.
And Dave, your thoughts?
I think it really depends on the task that's being done. For most of the things I do, because they're relatively short, I like PageMaker. And PageMaker comes from the world of manual paste-up, and anyone who's done any manual paste-up knows how to do that operation, even if it was only in the third grade when you pasted together your first collage. But if you want to do document handling, if I was going to write a 500-page book, particularly if I had to have a very intensive one, and I've gone through that route of having to make very long documents, Ventura Publisher is a very nice package to do that. It also can depend on your printer, too. If you have particular types of printers, like if you're working with an Electroset printer, then Quark Express is really good because it's designed to work with that printer. And if you've got a package that works with the printer that you've got, particularly if it's designed for that, that's a big plus. You want to have, as I was saying before, one of the important things is what kind of output you have. That's why you're into desktop publishing in the first place.
And let's go to the telephones at 263-WXXI to talk about your questions and comments. Hi, you're on the air with us.
Yes, I wondered if your guests would agree that in some ways the software companies have oversold desktop publishing to the end user, and that somebody who may have previously been sending a newsletter or marketing piece out to an agency, and there are five or six people, an editor, a writer, a type setter, a layout person, a graphic person, now expects that they're going to go out and buy a desktop publishing package to do this all themselves.
Interesting question.
I think that people who buy the package have to also understand that you can buy a tool, but whether or not you own the tool doesn't mean that you can do a really good job with it. It also doesn't mean that any one person can do all of those tasks. To buy a desktop publisher means that technically you're capable of having one person do all of those things. Whether or not that's a good idea, that's a corporate decision or an individual decision that people have to make. I like desktop publishing, but I'm the world's worst graphic artist. I'm the first one to admit it. In an operation where I would want to be, and I would much prefer to either have someone do that for me or have to go the route of producing graphics by taking them from clip art packages. In any case, I don't think there's any case where you can say that there's a tool that can give you really high output and say that someone is pushing that. Anyone who can use the tool can go to town with it, and I think there are lots of people out there with desktop publishing souls who just haven't got there yet.
By the same token, you might be interested, if you're a member of this station, by the way, you are probably reading the program guide. It's desktop published, and I understand it's sent off camera ready. Now, that's a pretty sophisticated piece of editing, and it is done right here, and it's sent off camera ready to the printer. So that shows you what you can do.
Okay, thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much for calling. And 263-WXXI, incidentally, is our number. That is how you make the connection to become a part of Soundbites and get your questions answered. We're talking this hour, this segment, about desktop publishing, and in just a few minutes, a little over 10 minutes from now, we will be making the trek to New York City, where we'll be talking to John Petrovsky, and we'll be talking about the dangers of networking and what he learned when he was probing through the emergency medical system computer network in New York City. We had hoped, of course, to bring that to you even earlier, but we're delighted to be able to bring this segment to the program to you a little bit earlier as well. Got our phone system problems, incidentally, all squared away. So 263-WXXI is how you make the connection. We'd be delighted to hear from you if you've got any questions about desktop publishing, which is, let's face it, one of the new and growing areas of use for a personal computer today. Continuing on nuts and bolts, we talked a little bit about graphic arts. And depending on the program, how sophisticated can you get? Can you even get to the point of designing, making your own line drawings directly onto the computer? Can you even get to the point of making very sophisticated illustrations, graphs, etc., and integrating it right into the text and moving it around like that? This is the way you see it depicted in television commercials all the time for the various competing systems. Is that something that this kind of software makes relatively easy to do?
Usually those TV commercials you see haven't shown you the first half hour where the person was setting everything up for that one grand keystroke that put it all together. Yeah, it is possible. It really is. Again, as Dave mentioned, it depends a lot on the abilities and skills of the person using the product. I've seen very nice, simple documents put out by people, and that's as much of an aspiration that they have with their desktop publishing package. I've seen people put out fantastic things where they were wearing the hat of graphic designer, wearing the hat of typographer, wearing the hat of layout editor, layout artist. So it really does depend on how deeply a person gets into the package. But most of the packages that I work with, it'd be very easy for you to create an entire publication, line art, graphics, illustrations, text, everything.
Now, the question becomes then, once you've got the software, and we're agreed that there are a number of software packages which have the capacity to do this, then the hardware comes into play. Now, I want to get into an area which I suspect is a little controversial at this point, and that is, what kind of computer system is best suited to this application? The Apple Mac people say it's ours. I've heard PC clone and PC people say, no, 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 you can do it just as easily, just as readily on one of ours. It may be a little tougher to learn, but once you get there, it's just as easy. All right, I want to hear your point of view. Be interested to hear what our audience has to say, too.
Can I answer that one, Dave? I would say it's the system you own right now. Okay? Best answer you could possibly say to someone is, what do you have right now available to you? Okay, there's no sense in reinvesting in hardware because there are wonderful packages in the PC world and in the Macintosh world, and really it comes down to just a question of economics. What is going to be the least amount of investment that you have to put into a package?
But then, of course, the question comes, well, suppose I don't own a system, or suppose I don't have one with any real kind of capacity right now. Suppose I'm still back in the Commodore VIC-20 world, or suppose I'm just really getting around to starting to do something with more than 64K or 128K of memory. What do I do then?
Dave wants to answer this one.
This is a controversy, isn't it?
Oh, sure. But I think really if you're looking at it from the user's point of view, what you have to think about is how much money you want to spend and how good an output you want to have. And one of my only complaints about the Macintosh world is how expensive it is. I would love to have one if I could only afford it, which is why I'm in the PC world, because I want to get high-quality output. It's not as easy as it is on a Mac, but it's also within my price range. So I think the word easy comes into price range as well. Can I afford to do that? Can I afford to make it that easy?
Now, of course, there's something else. There's another consideration, too. As you mentioned, the machine that you've got right now, Brian, is the one that you ought to be thinking about starting with. And I guess the question becomes then, about how much machine do you absolutely have to run the programs that are out there nowadays? Let's say you've got just for sake of argument, XT. I'll get personal about it, because that's what I happen to have. Is that machine going to be adequate to run the most sophisticated of the current programs that's out there?
It'll run Ventura. I believe, Dave, it'll run PageMaker. You'll need 640K of RAM memory. You'll also probably need a considerable amount of hard disk space to store the program and fonts and any graphics and text and so forth that you want to work with. But sure, an XT is very much a credible machine in that capacity.
Okay, well, that reassures me personally. It sounds like I'm okay, but even leaving that aside, most of the clones that people are buying, whether they're XT clones or maybe AT clones or the rest, are going to be perfectly adequate then to handle most of the sophisticated programs.
Sure. Most of the question is, it's a consideration of how supercharged you want to get with your operation. How much time are you willing to spend for that graphic to redraw on the screen? And there are, certainly are ways of working around that. Again, it's a question of economics. Is it economical for you to spend your time waiting for the screen to redraw, or is it more economical for you to spend the money in a supercharged system that will give you what you want instantly?
Now, of course, it's only as good as its printer, in a way, because you can have the most sophisticated program in the world and the fastest processor to handle it. But if the printer won't print it, or at least won't print it faithfully, and all the different shadings, you're in deep trouble. Question then is, how much of a printer do you need to really do an adequate job? Will dot matrixes make it, or do you really want to spend the money for a laser jet? That is a biggie, isn't it?
It's sometimes sad to see people who go out and spend $10,000 to $12,000 on their hardware and spend $162 on their dot matrix printer and then get really poor results out of it and wonder why. No matter how high-tech your hard disk is, no matter how high-tech your machine is, whether it's an Apple or a Macintosh, if you're dealing with a printer that's only capable of doing low-quality output, that's what you get. I think probably for a desktop publisher, if you want high-quality output, that's one of the things you have to decide. If you're in the IBM world, for instance, and you decide, I don't really need super high-quality output, you can go with a lower-cost desktop publisher. You can go with something like PFS First Publisher or Byline and not have to go the route of, I'm going to spend a lot of money for my program. It's nothing worse than spending $700-$800 for like Ventura or PageMaker and then going and spending $100 on your printer and being very disappointed with the poor output that you get.
Good rule of thumb to be to spend at least as much on your printer as you did on your software?
Probably more.
Another alternative here for people who may have little money initially to work with but may anticipate more money being available later on is to get a lesser quality printer and for the first several months or so sending their work out to a printing service. There are printing services who will take your files and then print them out for you.
Right, and then they will produce something that's camera ready if
sure.
need be.
Yes.
But one thing I wonder too, are there dot matrix printers out there, U24 dot or whatever, are there dot matrix printers that can approach LaserJet quality well enough that you can feel relatively satisfied with them? Or do you really, if you're going to spend this much money on a program, do you really need to go LaserJet? That's a question I'm struggling with right now, I have to admit myself.
There are some really nice 24-pin printers, and I've seen some really nice output from any number of 24-pin printer units. But to be honest, if you look at them, you can tell that they're 24-pin printers. And the reason why I think the output looks good, if you look at an ad in InfoWorld, if you look at an ad for those in PC Magazine, you'll see those printers, yes, they look really nice at certain sizes. The trick with desktop publishing is you're not fixing yourself to a size. In fact, you can't. One of the things about desktop publishing is you change the size of the text all the time. As soon as the text starts getting small, that's where you can tell right away whether it was printed on a laser printer or was printed on a dot matrix printer.
And I would suggest people out in the market for a printer that they take a look at printed quality. Compare actual printouts from several different printers and determine that way. Is this something that you'll be proud to present to people as your end product?
Good advice. On that note, this segment, unfortunately, time has run out on it, but I do have time at least to say thank you to Dave Woodruff, to Brian Wilson, and to Jody Davies for giving us a look into desktop publishing. They all, of course, come to us from PC Cubed. This is Soundbites on WXXI 1370.